Welcome to Radio Who, What, Why. I'm Jeff Sheckman. If there is any topic today that is both controversial and primitive in its discussions, it's the subject of guns. Whether it's talk about militia or our founders or talking hunting in an urban culture, the conversation seems to be from another place and another time. On the other hand, in almost every realm today, technology and creative destruction is altering how we live, work, and do business. So why not guns? In short, can technology change the fundamentals of the debate about the use and safety of guns? Exploring this and moving this conversation forward has been the work of the Smart Technology Challenge Foundation. I'm joined today by its president, Margot Hirsch. Margot, welcome to Radio Who, What, Why.
Jeff, thanks so much for having me.
It's great to have you here. First of all, tell us a little bit about what the Smart Tech Challenges Foundation is all about.
The Smart Tech Challenges Foundation was founded after Sandy Hook to address gun violence through innovation and technology. We took a look at it at that very tragic moment, and we surveyed the firearm landscape and found that up to that point, there had been minimal, if any, new innovation in firearm safety. So in January of 2014, we launched a $1 million challenge to attract innovators who are developing gun safety technologies. And we weren't sure how many people we would actually get to apply. We were hopeful that we might have 30 at best. And we got 200 applications from over 30 countries around the world of people who proposed a variety of solutions that could address firearm safety. And from there, we had an independent judging panel narrow those 200 applications down to 15, and we dispersed the funds for them to develop their different solutions. And today we've got those innovators who are working on things from gun safes to trigger locks to retrofit kits for existing guns, and then actual smart guns themselves.
And was this done essentially in a vacuum by the foundation and its efforts, or were there attempts to bring in either government, law enforcement, or the gun manufacturers, et cetera?
In all honesty, I guess I'd like to think it wasn't in a vacuum, but when we looked at what was happening in the whole gun violence space, we felt that the legislative approach was gridlocked and nothing was happening. And you could argue that's still the case today. And so we felt that technology could play a real role here, like we do in many other aspects of our lives. And this was a great way to apply technology solutions to a very critical social problem that we have in this country and bypass the political system. So I wouldn't call it a vacuum. It was just a way to try to make progress in a very politicized, difficult area.
And when you think this through, when you think about the ways in which progress can be made, given the legislative roadblocks, given some of the public policy roadblocks at every level, talk a little bit about the ways in which you think that progress can happen and where, how, and on what level.
Well, I think we view it that this needs to be driven by the consumer, by the free market. We want to make these technologies available to gun owners so they have a choice to go out and purchase a firearm that can make their families safer. These technologies are not really meant to prevent mass killings, although we're seeing those more frequently and they're incredibly horrific. These smart gun technologies are about keeping guns out of the wrong hands. They're about personalizing a gun to a specific user so that your child or someone who tries to grab your gun away from you cannot use it. And we feel that that is pretty much going to happen through the private markets versus government intervention, or even the gun manufacturers, because the gun manufacturers are reticent to get into the smart gun game And so we feel that this is going to be driven again by the private sector.
And is this going to happen with respect to add-ons to existing guns, or is this something that's being thought about with respect to entirely new guns manufactured by new companies?
Both. You've got 300 million plus or minus guns out there today. So ideally, you want to find solutions that address some of those guns out there, because you can't, you know, they're going to be there. They're not going anywhere. So we have some solutions that have the ability to retrofit an existing firearm like an AR-15 and put a biometric lock on it, so that no one but the authorized user can use it. And then in addition to those, then you have the 10 million new guns that come into the market every year. And that's where the smart gun technology that's being developed would impact those numbers.
Talk a little bit about the concern that, to the extent that more and more guns come with this smart gun technology, or it's mandated at some point along the way, that it creates a potential black market in old-fashioned kinds of guns.
We don't believe it will create a black market. First of all, mandating at this point, we do not believe is the way to go. This is technology that's not even ready for market. There's only been one gun out there, the Armadix IP, one that's been introduced into the market, and it's not even there right now that we can see. So to mandate technologies that haven't finished their development is premature. So the idea is that this is another option when you're someone who's in the market to purchase a gun, that you can choose this type of technology over a traditional gun.
How has law enforcement responded to this?
Well, we've talked to cities like San Francisco. I can't give a blanket answer for all law enforcement, but we've spoken to some law enforcement agencies, and the feedback that we have gotten has been very positive. They are open for testing and piloting the smart guns, and initially, we see these guns being used by a subset of law enforcement. So undercover officers who don't wear standard holsters and are susceptible to gun grabs. Off-duty officers who take their guns home and have children in the house. And then there's air marshals and university officers. So any type of law enforcement officer who could potentially have their gun taken away are the most interested, because obviously if a gun gets taken away and used, it could be devastating.
One of the things that you've been talking about is something that's often referred to as this user authentication technology. There's also another area that technology is looking at, this idea of electronic recovery technology. What is that all about?
Electronic recovery technology is technology that's essentially used in your phone. When you need to find your phone, that it has technology that tells you, that sends out a signal to tell you where your phone is. However, this type of technology, at least in the guns that are being designed by our innovators, is not going to be automatically put into the firearm. That would be an add-on and not a given, because as we hear from the people who oppose these technologies, they're very concerned that the government will come take their guns. Well, that's only if you look at the technology being used right now in the smart guns that are being developed, biometric and RFID, that capability is not inherent in those technologies. You would have to add it on. And that is not, it's obviously going to be up to the individual manufacturer, but that is not something that smart guns will automatically have in them.
Talk a little bit about the state of the research right now. How much money is being spent now? How much more needs to be spent to move this effort forward?
There hasn't been a lot of money put towards smart gun development. I think in the last 15 or 20 years, the number is under $20 million, which is minimal. And the DOJ has been the primary source of those funds. In recent years, it's basically been the Smart Tech Challenges Foundation, and we've only had $1 million, which doesn't even begin to be enough to advance these technologies. So we are hoping that we will see increased funds available from the federal government or even at the state or local level. But realistically, I think funds will come from the private sector. And today, we're looking for investors who are interested in investing in these technologies to step forward and invest in our different innovators to help drive the technologies forward and closer to market.
To your knowledge, are any of the traditional gun manufacturers, the Smith & Wessons of the world, are any of them working on this kind of technology or any variations of it?
Not that we know of. They might have stealth R&D in the works, but I am not aware of them. I have reached out to them and have not received any word back, any response. I do know the federal government, the White House, has been trying to have conversations with the gun manufacturers. And when you look at the executive action, this is basically aimed towards the gun manufacturers getting involved, weighing in, and being part of this smart gun initiative.
Is there concern that if, in fact, there is some further research and development on this and some progress is made in the private sector and that there's some public policy pressure for it, that the major manufacturers will usurp any action taken in that regard?
At the end of the day, our aim is to get smart guns to market. And whether it's through the gun manufacturers or our individual innovators, at the end of the day, it's a win for all of us, no matter how they get there.
Do you see a time frame for all of this at this point?
A lot of the timing will depend on capital. These innovators need additional capital to finish the prototype development, the testing required, and then getting them to market. Most likely, it'll be in 2 to 5 years, hopefully sooner, and in our opinion, not fast enough.
Talk a little bit about ideas you've heard, some of the cutting-edge research, really, things that may not even exist in prototype form, but ideas that you're hearing about ways to even go beyond some of the technologies that we've talked about today.
As you know, the two predominant forms that we're seeing right now are fingerprint biometric scanners and RFID. Besides RFID and biometric technology, we aren't seeing too many out-of-the-box technologies, but one thing I have heard of is using facial recognition software. As we know, cameras have been shrunk down to a tiny size that could actually fit into a gun, so you could authenticate based on facial recognition, which overcomes the problem of having a fingerprint read if it was dirty or wet. But other than that, I haven't seen or heard anything beyond what we've been looking at in the areas of different types of radio frequency and the biometric technology. To be honest with you, it's interesting. I'm sure there's something that will be developed and will come forward at some point, but right now it's pretty straightforward, breaking down between the biometric and the RFID technologies.
And is it your sense, finally, that the research on this, that the work that the Smart Tech Challenges Foundation and your organization is doing, and that other private sector groups are doing, that this work is going to actively continue at this point?
Yes, we have plans to continue the work we're doing, and we are hoping others will get involved as we continue to make progress. The good news is this year there was a Johns Hopkins study that showed that almost 60% of Americans surveyed would purchase a smart gun if it was available, and 43% of gun owners said they would purchase one. That is leaps and bounds of where we were when we started almost 3 years ago. And I think that will continue as people become more educated on the potential that these technologies hold to reduce injuries and save lives.
Margo Hirsch, she's the president of the Smart Tech Challenges Foundation. Margo, I thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you. And thank you for listening and joining us here on Radio Who, What, Why. I hope you join us next week for another Radio Who, What, Why podcast. I'm Jeff Scheckman. If you like this podcast, please feel free to share and help others find it by rating and reviewing it on iTunes. You can also support this podcast and all the work we do by going to whowhatwhy.org/donate.